puts us into trance, pours language, definitions, idioms, concepts into us for moments that feel like hours. Then we dictate at once what he has poured into us while it's fresh. But it can't be just anybody. It requires a sharp accent and the ability to join trance rapport and then spill out the results. Sam, for example, has everything but the accent. He manages, God knows how, to speak Martian with a Bronx accent. Can't use him. It would cause endless errata. That is what Allie is doing, dictating. She's in the semi-trance needed for total recall, and if you interrupt her, she'll lose what she hasn't recorded.
Nagrok, Jubal agreed. Although the picture of Becky Veezy as a Martian adept shakes me a little. Still, she was one of the best mentalists in show business. She could give a cold reading that would scare Mark out of his shoes. Stinky, if you are going away for peace and quiet while you unwind this, why don't you come home? Plenty of room in the new wing.
Perhaps we shall. Waiting is. Sweetheart, Miriam said earnestly, that's a solution I would love, if Mike pushes us out of the nest.
If we grok to leave the nest, you mean?
Same thing.
You speak rightly, my dearest. But when do we eat around here? I feel a most un-Martian urgency. The service was better in the nest.
You can't expect Patty to work on your dratted old dictionary, see to it that everyone is comfortable, run errands for Mike, and still have food on the table the instant you get hungry, my love. Jubal, Stinky will never achieve priesthood. He's a slave to his stomach.
Well, so am I.
You girls might give Patty a hand, her husband added. That's a crude hint. You know we do all she'll let us, and Tony will hardly allow anyone in his kitchen.
She stood up.
Come on, Jubal, let's see what's cooking. Tony will be flattered if you visit his kitchen.
Jubal went with her, met Tony, who scowled until he saw who was with Miriam, then was beamingly proud to show off his workshop, accompanied by invective at the scoundrels who had destroyed his kitchen and the nest. In the meantime, a spoon, unassisted, continued to keel a pot of spaghetti sauce. Shortly thereafter, Jubal refused to sit at the head of a long table, grabbed a place elsewhere. Patty sat at one end. The head chair remained vacant, except for a feeling which Jubal suppressed, that the man from Mars was sitting there, and that everyone but himself could see him. Across the table was Dr. Nelson. Jubal discovered that he would have been surprised only if Dr. Nelson had not been present. He nodded and said,
Hi, Sven.
Hi, Doc.
Share water?
Never thirst.
What are you, staff physician?
Nelson shook his head.
Medical student.
So, learning anything?
I've learned that medicine isn't necessary.
If you'd asked me, I could have told you.
Seen Van?
He ought to be in late tonight or early tomorrow. His ship grounded today.
Does he always come here? Inquired Jubal.
He's an extension student. Can't spend much time here.
It'd be good to see him. I haven't laid eyes on him for a year.
Jubal picked up a conversation with the man on his right while Nelson talked with Dorcas on his right. Jubal noticed the same tingling expectancy at the table which he had felt before, but reinforced. There was nothing he could put his finger on, a quiet family dinner in relaxed intimacy. Once a glass of water was passed all around the table. When it reached Jubal, he took a sip and passed it to the girl on his left, round-eyed and too awed to make chit-chat with him, and said,
I offer you water.
She managed to answer,
I thank you for water, Jubal.
That was all he got out of her. When the glass completed the circuit, reaching the vacant chair at the head of the table, there was a half inch of water in it. It raised itself, poured, and water disappeared. The tumbler placed itself on the cloth. Jubal decided that he had taken part in a sharing water of the innermost temple, probably in his honor, although it was not like the bacchanalian revels he had thought accompanied such welcome. Was it because they were in strange surroundings? Or had he read into unexplicit reports what his own id wanted to find? Or had they toned it down out of deference to him? That seemed a likely theory, and it vexed him. He told himself that he was glad to be spared the need to refuse an invitation that he did not want, and would not have relished at any age, his tastes being what they were, but just the same, damn it. Don't anybody mention ice skating. Grandma is too old and frail, and it wouldn't be polite. Hilda, you suggest dominoes, and we'll all chime in. Grandma likes dominoes. We'll go skating some other time, okay, kids? Jubal resented the idea. He would almost prefer to go skating anyhow, even at the cost of a broken hip. He put it out of his mind, and with the help of the man on his right. His name, Jubal learned, was Sam.
This setback is only apparent, Sam assured him. The egg was ready to hatch, and now we'll spread out. Of course, we'll go on having trouble because no society will allow its basic concepts to be challenged with impunity, and we are challenging everything from the sanctity of property to the sanctity of marriage.
Property, too?
Property the way it is today. So far, Michael has merely antagonized a few crooked gamblers. But what happens when there are thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and more of people who can't be stopped by bank vaults and have only self-discipline to restrain them from taking anything they want? To be sure, that discipline is stronger than any legal restraint, but no banker can grok that until he himself travels the thorny road to discipline. And he'll no longer be a banker. What happens to the market when Illuminati know which way a stock will move?
Do you know?
Sam shook his head. Not interested. But Saul over there, that other big heeb, my cousin, gives it grokking with Allie. Michael has them be cautious, no big killings, and they use a dozen dummy accounts. But any of the disciplined can make any amount of money at anything. Real estate, stocks, horse races, gambling, you name it. When competing with the unawakened. Nah, money and property will not disappear. Michael says that both concepts are useful. But they're going to be turned upside down, and people will have to learn new rules. The hard way, just as we have, or be hopelessly outclassed. What happens to Lunar Enterprises when the common carrier between here and Luna City is teleportation?
Should I buy or sell?
Ask Saul. He might use the present corporation, or bankrupt it, or it might be left untouched a century or two. But consider any occupation. How can a teacher handle a child who knows more than she does? What becomes of physicians when people are healthy? What happens to the cloak and suit industry when clothing isn't necessary? And women aren't so engrossed in dressing up. They'll never lose interest entirely. And nobody gives a damn if he's caught with his arse bare. What shape does the farm problem take when weeds can be told not to grow and crops can be harvested without benefit of international harvester? Just name it. The discipline changes it beyond recognition. Take one change that will shake both marriage in its present form and property. Jubal, do you know how much you spend each year in this country on Malthusian drugs and devices?
I have some idea, Sam. Almost $1 billion on oil contraceptives alone, more than half on worthless patent nostrums.
Oh, yes, you're a medical man.
Only in passing.
What happens to that industry and to the shrill threats of moralists when a female conceives only as an act of volition, when she is immune to disease, cares only for the approval of her own sort, and has her orientation so changed that she desires intercourse with a wholeheartedness that Cleopatra never dreamed of? But any male who tried to rape her would die so quickly, if she so grokked, that he wouldn't know what hit him. When women are free of guilt and fear, but invulnerable. Hell, the pharmaceutical industry will be a minor casualty. What other industries, laws, institutions, attitudes, prejudices, and nonsense must give way?
I don't grok its fullness, admitted Jubal. It concerns a subject of little personal interest to me.
One institution won't be damaged. Marriage.
So?
Very much so. Instead, it will be purged, strengthened, and made endurable. Endurable. Ecstatic. See that wench down there with the long black hair?
Yes, I was delighting in its beauty earlier.
She knows it's beautiful, and it's grown a foot and a half since we joined the church. That's my wife. Not much over a year ago, we lived together like bad-tempered dogs. She was jealous, and I was inattentive. Bored. Hell, we were both bored, and only our kids kept us together. That and her possessiveness. I knew she would never let me go without a scandal, and I didn't have any stomach for trying to put together a new marriage at my age anyhow. So I grabbed a little on the side when I could get away with it. A professor has many temptations, few safe opportunities. And Ruth was quietly bitter, or sometimes not quiet. And then we joined up. Sam grinned happily. And I fell in love with my wife, number one gal friend. Sam had spoken only to Jubal, his words walled by noise. His wife was far down the table. She looked up and said clearly, "That's an exaggeration, Jubal. I'm about number 6. Her husband called out, "Stay out of my mind, beautiful. We're talking men talk. Give Larry your undivided attention." He threw a roll at her. She stopped it in orbit, propelled it back. "I'm giving Larry all the attention he wants. Until later, maybe. Jubal, that brute didn't let me finish. 6th place is wonderful. Because my name wasn't on his list till we joined the church. I hadn't rated as high as 6 with Sam for 20 years. The point, Sam said quietly, is that we are now partners, more so than we ever were outside. And we got that way through the training, culminating in sharing and growing closer with others who had the same training. We all wind up in partnerships inside the group, usually with spouses of record, sometimes not.
And if not, the readjustment takes place without heartache and creates a warmer, better relationship between the divorced couple than ever, in bed and out. No loss and all gain. Shucks, this pairing needn't be between man and woman. Dawn and Jill, for example. They work together like an acrobatic team.
I had thought of them as being Mike's wives.
No more so than they are to any of us, or than Mike is to the rest. Mike has been too busy to do more than make sure that he shared himself all the way around. Sam added, if anybody is Mike's wife, it's Patty, although she keeps so busy that the relation is more spiritual than physical. Both Mike and Patty are shortchanged when it comes to mauling the mattress. Patty was farther away than Ruth. She looked up and said, Sam, dear, I don't feel shortchanged. Huh? Sam announced bitterly. The only thing wrong with this church is that a man has absolutely no privacy. This brought on him a barrage from Distaff Brothers. He tossed it all back without lifting a hand until a plateful of spaghetti caught him full in the face, thrown, Jubal noticed, by Dorcas. For a moment, Sam looked like a crash victim. Then his face was clean, and even sauce that spattered on Jubal's shirt was gone. Don't give her any more, Tony. She wasted it. Let her go hungry. Plenty in the kitchen, Tony answered. Sam, you look good in spaghetti. Pretty good sauce, huh? Dorcas's plate sailed out, returned loaded. Very good sauce, agreed Sam. I salvaged some that hit me in the mouth. What is it? Or shouldn't I ask? Chopped policeman, Tony answered. Nobody laughed. Jubal wondered if the joke was a joke. Then he recalled that his brothers smiled a lot, but rarely laughed. And besides, policemen should be good food. But the sauce couldn't be long pig or it would taste like pork. This had a beef flavor. He changed the subject.
The thing I like best about this religion...
Religion? Sam interposed.
Well, call it a church.
Yes, Sam agreed. It fills every function of a church, and its quasi-theology matches up with some real religions. I jumped in because I used to be a stalwart atheist, and now I'm a high priest and don't know what I am.
I understood you to say you were Jewish.
From a long line of rabbis. So I wound up atheist. Now look at me. But Saul and my wife Ruth are Jews in the religious sense. Talk to Saul. You'll find it's no handicap. Ruth, once she broke past the barriers, progressed faster than I did. She was a priestess long before I became a priest. But she's the spiritual sort. She thinks with her gonads. Me, I have to do it the hard way between my ears.
The discipline, repeated Jubal. That's what I like.
The faith I was reared in didn't require anybody to know anything. Just confess and be saved, and there you were, safe in the arms of Jesus. A man might be too stupid to count sheep, yet conclusively presumed to be one of God's elect, guaranteed an eternity of bliss because he had been converted. He might not even be a Bible student, and certainly didn't have to know anything else.
This church doesn't accept conversion, as I grok it.
You grok correctly.
A person must start with a willingness to learn, and follow it with long, hard study.
I grok that is salutary.
More than salutary, agreed Sam. Indispensable. The concepts can't be thought about without the language and the discipline that results in this horn of plenty of benefits, from how to live without fighting to how to please your wife, all derived from conceptual logic, understanding who you are, why you're here, how you tick, and behaving accordingly. Happiness is functioning the way a being is organized to function. But the words in English are a tautology, empty. In Martian, they are a complete set of working instructions. Did I mention that I had cancer when I came here?
Eh? No.
Didn't know it myself. Michael Grocht had sent me out for x-rays and so forth so that I would be sure. Then we got to work on it. Faith healing, a miracle. The clinic called it spontaneous remission, which I grok means I got well.
Jubal nodded. Professional double talk. Some cancers go away, we don't know why.
I know why this one went away. By then I was beginning to control my body. With Mike's help, I repaired the damage. Now I can do it without help. Want to feel a heart stop beating?
Thanks, I have observed it in Mike. My esteemed colleague Croker Nelson would not be here if what you were talking about was faith healing. It's voluntary control. I grok.
Sorry. We all know that you do.
I can't call Mike a liar because he isn't. But the lad is prejudiced in my case.
Sam shook his head. I've been talking with you all through dinner. I wanted to check in myself, despite what Mike said. You grok. I'm wondering what you could disclose if you had trouble to learn the language.
Nothing. I'm an old man with little to contribute.
I reserve my opinion. All the other first called have had to tackle the language to make any real progress. Even the three you've kept with you have had powerful coaching, kept in trance during most of the few occasions we've had them with us. All but you. And you don't need it. Unless you want to wipe spaghetti from your face without a towel, which I grok you uninterested in.
Only to observe it.
Most had left the table, without formality, when they wished. Ruth came over and stood by them. Are you two going to sit here all night, or shall we move you out with the dishes?
I'm henpecked.
Come on, Jubal. Sam paused to kiss his wife. They stopped in the room with the stereo tank.
Anything new? Asked Sam.
The county attorney, someone said, has been orating that today's disasters are our doing, without admitting that he doesn't know how it was done.
Poor fellow, he's bitten a wooden leg and his teeth hurt.
They found a quieter room. Sam said, I had been saying that these troubles can be expected, and will get worse before we will control enough public opinion to be tolerated. But Mike is in no hurry. We close down the Church of All Worlds. It is closed. So we move and open the Congregation of the One Faith and get kicked out again. Then we reopen elsewhere as the Temple of the Great Pyramid. That will bring flocking the fat and fatuous females, and some will end up neither fat nor foolish. And when we have the Medical Association in the local bar and newspapers and politicos snapping at our heels there, why, we open the Brotherhood of Baptism somewhere else. Each one gains a hard core of discipline who can't be hurt. Mike started less than 2 years ago, uncertain himself and with only the help of three untrained priestesses. Now we've got a solid nest, plus advanced pilgrims we can get in touch with later. Someday we'll be too strong to persecute.
Well, agreed Jubal. Jesus made quite a splash with only 12 disciples.
Sam grinned happily. That's you, boy. Thanks for mentioning him. He's the top success story in my tribe, and we all know it, even though many of us don't talk about him. He was a Jew boy who made good, and I'm proud of him. Please note that Jesus didn't try to get it all done by Wednesday. He set up a sound organization and let it grow. Mike is patient, too. Patience is so much part of the discipline that it isn't patience. It's automatic. Never any sweat.
A sound attitude at any time.
Not an attitude. The functioning of discipline. Jubal? Agrak, you were tired. Would you become untired, or would you rather go to bed? If you don't, our brothers will keep you up all night talking. We don't sleep much, you know.
Jubal yawned. I choose a long, hot soak and 8 hours sleep. I'll visit with our brothers tomorrow. And other days.
And many other days, agreed Sam. Jubal found his room, was immediately joined by Patty, who drew his tub, turned back his bed without touching it, placed his setup for drinks by his bed, mixed one and placed it on the shelf of the tub. Jubal did not hurry her out. She had arrived, displaying all her pictures. He knew enough about the syndrome, which can lead to full tattooing, to be sure that if he did not ask to examine them, she would be hurt. Nor did he feel the fret that Ben had felt on a similar occasion. He undressed, and discovered with wry pride that it did not matter, even though it had been years since the last time he had allowed anyone to see him naked. It seemed to matter not at all to Patty. She simply made sure that the tub was just right before letting him step into it. Then she remained, and told him what each picture was, and in what sequence to view them. Jubal was properly awed and appropriately complimentary, while completely the impersonal art critic. It was, he admitted to himself, the goddamnedest virtuosity with the needle he had ever seen. It made his Japanese friend look like a cheap carpet as compared with the finest Princess Bokhara. They've been changing a little, she told him. Take the holy breath scene here. That rear wall is beginning to look curved, and the bed almost looks like a hospital table. I'm sure George doesn't mind. There hadn't been a needle touched to me since he went to heaven. And if miraculous changes take place, I'm sure he has a finger in it. Jubal decided that Patty was dotty, but nice. He preferred people who were a little dotty. The salt of the earth bored him. Not too dotty, he amended. Patty had whisked his discarded clothes into his wardrobe without coming near them. She was probably a clear proof that one didn't have to be sane, whatever that was, to benefit by this discipline. The boy apparently could teach anyone. He sensed when she was ready to leave, and suggested it by asking her to kiss his goddaughters good night. He had forgotten.
I was tired, Patty.
She nodded. And I am called for dictionary work. She leaned over and kissed him, warmly but quickly. I'll take that one to our babies.
And a pat for Honeybun.
Yes, of course. She groks you, Jubal. She knows you like snakes.
Good.
Share water, brother.
Thou art God, Jubal. Jubal settled back in the tub, was surprised to find that he was not tired, and his bones no longer ached. Patty was a tonic, happiness on the hoof. He wished that he had no doubts, then admitted that he didn't want to be anything but himself, old and cranky and self-indulgent. Finally, he soaped and showered, and decided to shave so that he wouldn't have to before breakfast. Presently, he bolted the door, turned out the overhead light, and got into bed. He looked around for something to read, found nothing to his annoyance, being addicted to this vice above all else. He sipped part of a drink instead and turned out the bed light. His chat with Patty seemed to have wakened and rested him. He was still awake when Dawn came in. He called out,
"Who's there?"
"It's Dawn, Jubal."
"It can't be Dawn yet. It was only..." "Oh."
"Yes, Jubal. Me."
"Damn it, I thought I bolted that door. Child marched straight out of..." "Hey! Get out of this bed. Get!"
"Yes, Jubal. But I want to tell you something first."
"Huh?"
"I have loved you a long time. Almost as long as Jill has."
"Why, the very..." "Quit talking nonsense and shake your little fanny out the door."
"I will, Jubal," she said humbly. "But please listen to something first. Something about women."
"Not now. Tell me in the morning."
"Now, Jubal."
He sighed. "Talk. Stay where you are."
"Jubal, my beloved brother, men care very much how we women look, so we try to be beautiful, and that is a goodness. I used to be a peeler, as you know. It was a goodness to let men enjoy the beauty I was for them. It was a goodness for me, to know that they needed what I had to give. But, Jubal, women are not men. We care what a man is. It can be something as silly as, is he wealthy? Or it can be, will he take care of my children and be good to them? Or sometimes it can be, is he good? As you are good, Jubal. But the beauty we see in you is not the beauty you see in us. You are beautiful, Jubal."
"For God's sake."
"I think you speak rightly. Thou art God, and I am God. And I need you. I offer you water. Will you let me share and grow closer?"
Look, little girl, if I understand what you're offering..."
"You grok, Jubal. To share all that we have. Ourselves. Selves."
"I thought so. My dear, you have plenty to share, but myself, where you arrived years too late. I am sincerely regretful, believe me. Thank you, deeply. Now go away and let an old man sleep."
"You will sleep when waiting is filled. Jubal, I could lend you strength, but I grok clearly that it is not necessary."
"God damn it, it wasn't necessary." "No, Dawn. Thank you, dear."
She got to her knees and bent over him. "Just one more word, then. Jill told me that if you argued, I was to cry. Shall I get tears all over your chest and share water with you that way?"
"I'm going to spank Jill."
"Yes, Jubal. I'm starting to cry." She made no sound, but in a second or two a warm, full tear splashed on his chest. It was followed by another, and another, and still more. She sobbed almost silently. Jubal cursed and reached for her, and cooperated with the inevitable. Chapter 26. Jubal woke up, alert, rested, and happy, realized that he felt better before breakfast than he had in years. For a long, long time, he had been getting through that black period between waking and the first cup of coffee by telling himself that tomorrow might be a little easier. This morning, he found himself whistling. He noticed it, stopped himself, forgot it, and started up again. He saw himself in the mirror, smiled wryly, then grinned.
"You incorrigible old goat. They'll be sending the wagon for you any minute now."
He noticed a white hair on his chest, plucked it out, didn't bother with many others just as white, went on making himself ready to face the world. When he went outside his door, Jill was there. Accidentally? He no longer trusted any coincidence in this ménage. It was as organized as a computer. She came straight into his arms. "Jubal, oh, we love you so. Thou art God." He returned her kiss as warmly as it was given, grokking that it would be hypocritical not to, and discovered that kissing Jill differed from kissing Dawn, only in some fashion unmistakable but beyond definition. Presently he held her away from him.
"You baby Messalina, you framed me."
"Jubal, darling, you were wonderful."
How the hell did you know I was able?"
She gave back a gaze of clear-eyed innocence. "Why, Jubal, I've been certain ever since Mike was asleep. In trance. He could see around him quite a distance, and sometimes he would look in on you, a question to ask or something, to see if you were asleep."
"But I slept alone. Always."
"Yes, dear, that wasn't what I meant. I always had to explain things that he didn't understand."
"Phew."
He decided not to pursue it.
"Just the same. You shouldn't have framed me."
"I grok you don't mean that in your heart, Jubal. We had to have you in the nest all the way in. We need you. Since you were shy and humble in your goodness, we did what was needful to welcome you without hurting you. And we did not hurt you, as you grok."
"What is this wee stuff?"
"It was a full sharing water of all the nest. As you grok, you were there. Mike woke up for it, and grokked with you, and kept us all together." Jubal hastily abandoned this inquiry, too.
"So Mike is awake at last? That's why your eyes are shining?"
"Only partly. We are always delighted when Mike isn't withdrawn. It's jolly. But he's never really away. Jubal, I grok that you have not grok the fullness of our way of sharing water. But waiting will fill. Nor did Mike grok it at first. He thought it was only for quickening of eggs, as it is on Mars."
"Well, that's the primary purpose, babies. Which makes it silly behavior on the part of a person, namely me, who has no wish at my age to cause such increase."
She shook her head. "Babies are one result, but not the primary purpose. Babies give meaning to the future, and that is a great goodness. But only 3 or 4 or 12 times in a woman's life is a baby quickened in her. Out of thousands of times, she can share herself. And that is the primary use for what we can do so often, but would need to do so seldom if it were only for reproduction. It is sharing and growing closer forever and always, Jubal. Mike grokked this because on Mars the two things, quickening eggs and sharing closer, are entirely separate. And he grokked, too, that our way is best. What a happy thing it is not to have been hatched a Martian, to be human. And a woman." He looked at her closely.
"Child, are you pregnant?"
"Yes, Jubal. I grokked that waiting had ended and I was free to be. Most of the nest have not needed to wait, but Dawn and I have been busy. But when we grokked this cusp coming, I grokked there would be waiting after cusp, and you can see that there will be. Mike will not rebuild the temple overnight, so this high priestess will be unhurried in building a baby. Waiting always fills." From this high-flown mishmash, Jubal abstracted the central fact, or Jill's belief concerning such a possibility. Well, no doubt she had had plenty of opportunity. He resolved to keep an eye on the matter and bring her home for it. Mike's Superman methods were all very well, but it wouldn't hurt to have modern equipment at hand, too. Using Jill to eclampsia or some other mishap, he would not let happen, even if he had to get tough with the kids. He wondered about another such possibility, decided not to mention it.
"Where's Dawn? And where's Mike? The place seems awfully quiet."
No one else was in sight, and he heard no voices. And yet that odd feeling of happy expectancy was even stronger. He would have expected a release from tension after the ceremony he had apparently joined in himself, unbeknownst, but the air was more charged than ever. It suddenly reminded him of how he had felt as a very small boy when waiting for his first circus parade, and someone had called out, "There come the elephants!" Jubal felt as if, were he just a little taller, he could see the elephants past the excited crowd. But there was no crowd. "Dawn told me to give you a kiss for her. She'll be busy for the next 3 hours, about. And Mike is busy, too. He went back into withdrawal."
"Oh."
"Don't sound so disappointed. He'll be free soon. He's making a special effort so that he will be free on your account, and to let us all be free. Duke spent all night scouring the city for the high-speed recorders we use for the dictionary, and now we've got everybody who can possibly do it being jammed full of Martian phonic symbols. And then Mike will be through and can visit. Dawn has just started dictating. I finished one session, ducked out to say good morning, and I'm about to go back and get poured full of my last part of the chore, so I'll be gone a little longer than Dawn will be. And here's Dawn's kiss. The first one was just from me." She put her arms around his neck and put her mouth greedily to his, at last said, "My goodness, why did we wait so long? by for a little. Jubal found a few in the dining room. Duke looked up, smiled and waved, went back to hearty eating. He did not look as if he had been up all night, nor had he. He had been up two nights. Becky Veazey looked around when Duke waved and said happily, "Hi, you old goat," grabbed his ear, pulled him down and whispered, "I've known it all along. But why weren't you around to console me when the professor died?" She added aloud, "Sit down and we'll get some food into you while you tell me what devilment you've been plotting lately."
"Just a moment, Becky."
Jubal went around the table.
"Hi, Skipper. Good trip?"
"No trouble. It's become a milk run. I don't believe you've met Mrs. Van Tromp, my dear, the founder of this feat, the one and only Jubal Harshaw. Two of him would be too many." The captain's wife was a tall, plain woman, with the calm eyes of one who has watched from the widow's walk. She stood up, kissed Jubal. "Thou art God."
"Thou art God."
He might as well relax to the ritual. Hell, if he said it often enough, he might lose the rest of his buttons and believe it. And it did have a friendly ring with the arms of the skipper's frau firmly around him. He decided that she could teach even Jill something about kissing. How was it Anne described it? She gave it her whole attention. She wasn't going anywhere.
"I suppose, Van," he said, "I shouldn't be surprised to find you here."
"Well," answered the spaceman, "a man who commutes to Mars ought to be able to palaver with the natives, don't you think?"
"Just for powwow, huh?"
"There are other aspects." Van Tromp reached for a piece of toast. The toast cooperated. "Good food, good company?"
Yes.
"Jubal," Madame Vassant called out. "Soup's on." Jubal returned to his place, found eggs on horseback, orange juice, and other choice items. Becky patted his thigh. "A fine prayer meeting, me bucko."
"Woman, back to your horoscopes."
"Which reminds me, dearie, I want to know the exact instant of your birth."
I was born on three successive days. They had to handle me in sections."
Becky made a rude answer. "I'll find out."
"The courthouse burned down when I was three. You can't."
"There are ways. Want to bet?"
"You keep heckling me and you're fine. You're not too big to spank." "Have you been, girl?"
"What do you think? How do I look?"
"Healthy. A bit spread in the butt. You've touched up your hair."
"I have not. I quit using henna months ago." "Get with it, pal, and we'll get rid of that white fringe you've got. Replace it with a lawn."
"Becky, I refuse to grow younger. I came by my decrepitude the hard way, and I propose to enjoy it. Quit prattling and let a man eat."
"Yes, sir, you old goat." Jubal was just leaving as the man from Mars came in.
"Father."
"Oh, Jubal."
Mike hugged and kissed him.
Jubal gently unwound him.
"Be your age, son. Sit down and enjoy your breakfast. I'll sit with you."
"I didn't come here for breakfast. I came looking for you."
"We'll find a place and talk."
"All right."
They went to an unoccupied living room, Mike pulling Jubal by the hand like an excited small boy welcoming his favorite grandparent. Mike picked a big chair for Jubal and sprawled on a couch near him. They were on the side of the wing having the private landing flat, high French windows open to it. Jubal got up to shift his chair so that he would not be facing the light. He was mildly annoyed to find that the chair shifted itself. Remote control over objects was a labor saver, and probably a money saver, certainly on laundry. His spaghetti-splashed shirt had been so fresh that he had put it on again, and obviously to be preferred to the blind balkiness of mechanical gadgets. Nevertheless, Jubal was not used to telecontrol done without wires or waves. It startled him the way horseless carriages had disturbed decent, respectable horses about the time Jubal was born. Duke came in and served brandy. Mike said,
"Thanks, cannibal. Are you the new butler?"
"Somebody has to do it, monster. You've got every brain in the place slaving away over a hot microphone."
"Well, they'll be through in a couple of hours, and you can revert to your usual lecherous sloth." "The job is done, cannibal. Pow. 30. Ended."
"The whole damn Martian language in one lump? Monster, I'd better check you for burned-out capacitors."
"Oh, no. Only the primer knowledge that I have. Had, I mean. My brain's an empty sack. Eyebrows like Stinky will be going to Mars for a century to fill in what I never learned. But I did turn out a job. 6 weeks of subjective time since 5 this morning, or whenever it was we adjourned the sharing. And now the stalwart steady types can finish it while I loaf."
Mike stretched and yawned.
"Feels good. Finishing a job always feels good."
You'll be slaving away at something else before the day is out. Boss, this Martian monster can't take it or leave it alone. This is the first time he has relaxed in over 2 months. He ought to sign up with Workers Anonymous. Or you ought to visit us more often. You're a good influence.
God forbid that I should ever be.
Get out of here, cannibal, and quit telling lies. Lies, hell! You turn me into a compulsive truth-teller, and it's a handicap in the joints where I hang out. Duke left. Mike lifted his glass.
Share water, Father. Drink deep, son.
Thou art God.
Mike, I'll put up with that from the others. But don't you come godding at me. I knew you when you were only an egg.
Okay, Jubal. That's better.
When did you start drinking in the morning? Do that at your age and you'll ruin your stomach. You'll never live to be a happy old soak like me.
Mike looked at his glass. I drink when it's a sharing. It doesn't have any effect on me, nor on most of us, unless we want it to. Once I let it have its effect until I passed out, it's an odd sensation. Not a goodness, I grok. Just a way to discorporate for a while without discorporating. I can get a similar effect, only much better and with no damage to repair afterwards, by withdrawing.
Economical.
Uh-huh. Our liquor bill isn't anything. Matter of fact, running that whole temple hasn't cost what it costs you to keep up our home. Except for initial investment and replacing some props. Coffee and cakes was all. We made our own fund. We needed so little that I used to wonder what to do with the money that came in.
Then why did you take collections?
Huh? Oh, you have to charge them, Jubal. The marks won't pay attention if it's free.
I knew that. I wondered if you did.
Oh, yes, I grok marks, Jubal. At first I did preach free. Didn't work. We humans have to make considerable progress before we can accept a free gift and value it. I never let them have anything free until sixth circle. By then they can accept. And accepting is much harder than giving.
Son, maybe you should write a book on human psychology.
I have, but it's in Martian. Stinky has the tapes. Mike took a slow, sybaritic sip. We do use some liquor. A few of us, Saul, myself, Sven, some others, like it. I've learned to let it have just a little effect, then hold it, and gain a euphoric growing closer, much like trance, without having to withdraw. He sipped again. That's what I'm doing this morning, letting myself get the mildest glow and be happy with you. Jubal studied him closely.
Son, you've got something on your mind.
Yes.
Do you want to talk it out?
Yes. Father, it's always a great goodness to be with you, even if nothing is troubling me. But you are the only human I can talk to and know that you will grok and not be overwhelmed. Jill always groks. But if it hurts me, it hurts her still more. Dawn the same. Patty can always take my hurt away, but she does it by keeping it herself. They are too easily hurt for me to share in full with them anything I can't grok and cherish before I share it. Mike looked very thoughtful. Confession is needful. Catholics know that. They have a core of strong men to take it. Fosterites have group confession and pass it around and thin it out. I need to introduce confession in the early purging. Oh, we have it, but spontaneously after the pilgrim no longer needs it. We need strong men for that. Sin is rarely concerned with a real wrongness, but sin is what the sinner groks as sin, and when you grok with him, it can hurt.
I know.
Mike went on earnestly. Goodness is not enough. Goodness is never enough. That was one of my first mistakes, because among Martians, goodness and wisdom are identical. But not with us. Take Jill. Her goodness was perfect when I met her. Nevertheless, she was all mixed up inside, and I almost destroyed her, and myself too, for I was just as mixed up before we got squared away. Her endless patience, not common on this planet, was all that saved us. While I was learning to be human, and she was learning what I knew. But goodness alone is never enough. A hard, cold wisdom is required for goodness to accomplish good. Goodness without wisdom always accomplishes evil. Mike added most soberly, And that's why I need you, Father, as well as loving you. I need your wisdom and your strength, for I must confess to you. Jubal squirmed.
Oh, for Pete's sake, Mike, don't make a production out of it. Just tell me what's eating you. We'll find a way out.
Yes, Father. But Mike did not go on.
Finally, Jubal said,
"Do you feel busted up by the destruction of your temple? I wouldn't blame you. But you aren't broke. You can build again." "Oh, no, that doesn't matter at all. Right?"
That temple was a diary with its pages filled. Time for a new one rather than write over filled pages. Fire can't destroy the experiences. And from a standpoint of practical politics, being chased out in so spectacular a fashion will help, in the long run. Churches thrive on martyrdom and persecution. It's their best advertising. In fact, Jubal, the last couple of days have been an enjoyable break in a busy routine. No harm done. His expression changed.
"Father, lately I learned that I was a spy."
"What do you mean, son?"
"For the old ones. They sent me here to spy on our people."
Jubal thought about it. Finally, he said,
"Mike, I know you are brilliant. You possess powers that I don't have and have never seen before. But a man can be a genius and still have delusions."
"I know. Let me explain, and you decide whether or not I'm crazy. You know how the surveillance satellites used by the security forces operate?"
"No."
"I don't mean details that would interest Duke. I mean the general scheme. They orbit around the globe, picking up data and storing it. At a particular point, the sky eye is keyed, and it pours out all that it has seen. That is what they did with me. You know that we of the Nest use what is called telepathy?"
"I've been forced to believe it."
"We do. But this conversation is private. And besides, no one would attempt to read you. I'm not sure we could. Even last night, the link was through Dawn's mind, not yours."
"Well, that is some comfort."
"I am only an egg in this art. The old ones are masters. They linked with me, but left me on my own, ignored me, then triggered me, and all I had seen and heard and done and felt and grokked poured out and into their records. I don't mean that they wiped my mind of it. They simply played the tape, so to speak, made a copy. But the triggering I could feel, and it was over before I could stop it. Then they cut off the linkage. I couldn't even protest."
"Well, it seems to me that they used you shabbily."
"Not by their standards. Nor would I have objected. I would have been happy to volunteer, had I known it before I left Mars, but they didn't want me to know. They wanted me to grok without interference."
"I was going to add," Jubal said, "that if you are free of this damnable invasion of your privacy now, then what harm has been done? It seems to me that you could have had a Martian at your elbow all these past 2.5 years, with no harm other than attracting stares."
Mike looked very sober. Jubal listened to his story. Listen all the way through. Mike told him of the destruction of the missing fifth planet of Sol, whose ruins are asteroids.
"Well, Jubal?" "It reminds me of the myths about the flood."
"No, Jubal. The flood you aren't sure about. Are you sure about the destruction of Pompeii and Herculaneum?"
"Oh, yes. Those are established facts."
"Jubal, the destruction of the fifth planet by the old ones is as certain as that eruption of Vesuvius, and is recorded in much greater detail. No myth. Fact."
Stipulated. Do I understand that you fear that the old ones of Mars will give this planet the same treatment? Will you forgive me if I say that is hard for me to swallow?"
"Well, Jubal, it wouldn't take the old ones to do it. It merely takes knowledge of physics, how matter is put together, and the same control you have seen me use time and again, simply necessary first to grok what you want to manipulate. I can do it right now. Say a piece near the core of Earth, about 100 miles in diameter, much bigger than necessary, but we want to make this fast and painless, if only to please Jill. Feel out its size and place. Grok carefully how it is put together."
His face lost all expression, and his eyeballs started to turn up.
"Hey," broke in Harshaw, "stop it. I don't know whether you can or not, but I don't want you to try."
The face of the man from Mars became normal.
"Why, I would never do it. For me, it would be a wrongness. I am human."
"But not for them?"
"Oh, no. The old ones might grok at his beauty. I don't know. Oh, I have the discipline to do it, but not the volition. Jill could do it. That is, she could contemplate the exact method, but she could never will to do it. She is human, too. This is her planet. The essence of the discipline is, first, self-awareness, and then self-control.
By the time a human is able to destroy this planet by this method, instead of by clumsy things like cobalt bombs, it is not possible, I grok fully, for him to entertain the volition. He would discorporate, and that would end any threat. Our old ones don't hang around the way they do on Mars.
Son, as long as we're checking you for bats in your belfry, clear up something else. You've always spoken of these old ones as casually as I speak of the neighbor's dog, but I find ghosts hard to swallow. What does an old one look like?
Why, just like any other Martian.
Then how do you know it's not just an adult Martian? Does he walk through walls or such?
Any Martian can do that. I did yesterday.
Shimmers? Or anything?
No. You see, hear, feel them. Everything. It's like an image in a stereo tank, only perfect, and put right into your mind. But, look, Jubal, the whole thing would be a silly question on Mars, but I realize it isn't here. If you were present at the discorporation, death of a friend, then helped eat his body, and then you saw his ghost, talked with it, touched it, anything, would you then believe in ghosts?
Well, either that or I'd slip my leash.
All right, here it could be hallucination. If I grok correctly that we don't hang around when we discorporate, but in the case of Mars, there is either an entire planet all run by mass hallucination, or the straightforward explanation is correct, the one I was taught, and all my experience led me to believe. Because on Mars, ghosts are the most powerful and most numerous part of the population. The ones still alive, the corporate ones, are hewers of wood and drawers of water, servants to the old ones.
Jubal nodded. Okay. I'll never boggle at slicing with Occam's razor. While it runs contrary to my experience, mine is limited to this planet. Provincial. All right, son. You're scared they might destroy us?
Mike shook his head. Not especially. I think, this is not a grokking, but a guess, that they might do one of two things. Either destroy us, or attempt to conquer us culturally. Make us over into their own image.
But you're not fretted about us being blown up? That's a pretty detached viewpoint.
No.
Oh, they might decide to. You see, by their standards, we are diseased and crippled. The things we do to each other, the way we fail to understand each other, our almost complete failure to grok with one another, our wars and diseases and famines and cruelties, these will be insanity to them. I know. So I think they will decide on a mercy killing. But that's a guess. I'm not an old one. But Jubal, if they decide to, it will be... Mike thought a long time. A minimum of 500 years. More likely 5,000 before anything would be done.
That's a long time for a jury to be out.
Jubal, the greatest difference between the two races is that Martians never hurry, and humans always do. They would much rather think about it an extra century or half dozen to be sure that they grok all the fullness.
In that case, son, don't worry about it. If in another 500 or 1,000 years the human race can't handle its neighbors, you and I can't help it. However, I suspect that they will be able to.
So I grok, but not in fullness. I said I wasn't worried about that. The other possibility troubled me more, that they might move in and try to make us over. Jubal, they can't. An attempt to make us behave like Martians would kill us, as certainly, but not painlessly. It would be a great wrongness. Jubal took time to answer.
But, son, isn't that what you have been trying to do?
Mike looked unhappy.
It was what I started out to do. It is not what I'm trying to do now.
Father, I know that you were disappointed in me when I started this.
Your business, son.
Yes, self. I must grok each cusp, myself alone. And so must you. And so must each self. Thou art God.
I don't accept the nomination.
You can't refuse it. Thou art God, and I am God, and all that groks is God. And I am all that I have ever been or seen or felt or experienced. I am all that I grok. Father, I saw the horrible shape this planet is in, and I grokked, though not in fullness, that I could change it. What I had to teach couldn't be taught in schools. I was forced to smuggle it in as a religion, which it is not, and con the Marks into tasting it by appealing to their curiosity. In part, it worked as I knew it would, The discipline was just as available to others as it was to me, who was raised in a Martian nest. Our brothers get along together. You've seen, you've shared. Live in peace and happiness, with no bitterness, no jealousy. That alone was a triumph. Male femaleness is the greatest gift we have. Romantic physical love may be unique to this planet. If it is, the universe is a poorer place than it could be. And I grok dimly that we who are God will save this precious invention and spread it. The joining of bodies with merging of souls in shared ecstasy, giving, receiving, delighting in each other. Well, there's nothing on Mars to touch it. And it's the source, I grok, in fullness, of all that makes this planet so rich and wonderful. And jubil until a person, man or woman, has enjoyed this treasure bathed in the mutual bliss of minds linked as closely as bodies. That person is still as virginal and alone as if he had never copulated. But I grok that you have. Your very reluctance to risk a lesser thing proves it. And anyhow, I know it directly. You grok. You always have. Without needing the language of grokking. Dawn told us that you were as deep into her mind as you were into her body.
The lady exaggerates.
It is impossible for Dawn to speak other than rightly about this. And, forgive me, we were there. In her mind, but not in yours. And you were there with us. Sharing. Jubal refrained from saying that the only times he had ever felt that he could read minds was precisely in that situation, and then not thoughts, but emotions. He simply regretted without bitterness that he was not half a century younger, in which case Dawn would have had that miss taken off her name, and he would have boldly risked another marriage, despite his scars. Also that he would not trade the preceding night for all the years that might be left him. In essence, Mike was right.
Go on, sir.
That's what sexual union should be. But that's what I slowly grokked. It rarely was. Instead, it was indifference and acts mechanically performed, and rape and seduction as a game no better than roulette but less honest, and prostitution and celibacy by choice and by no choice, and fear and guilt and hatred and violence, and children brought up to think that sex was bad and shameful and animal and something to be hidden and always distrusted. This lovely, perfect thing, male-femaleness, turned upside down and inside out and made horrible. And every one of those wrong things is a corollary of jealousy. Jubal, I couldn't believe it. I still don't grok jealousy in fullness. It seems insanity to me. When I first learned what this ecstasy was, my first thought was that I wanted to share it. Share it at once with all my water brothers, directly with those female, indirectly by inviting more sharing with those male. The notion of trying to keep this never-failing fountain to myself would have horrified me had I thought of it. But I was incapable of thinking it. And in perfect corollary, I had no slightest wish to attempt this miracle with anyone I did not already cherish and trust. Jubal, I am made physically unable even to attempt love with a female who has not shared water with me. And this runs all through the nest. Psychic impotence. Unless spirits blend as flesh blends. Jubal was thinking mournfully that it was a fine system for angels. When a sky car landed on the private flat diagonally in front of him, he turned his head to see, and as its skids touched, it vanished.
Trouble? He asked.
No, Mike denied. They are beginning to suspect that we are here, that I am, rather. They think the rest are dead. The innermost temple, I mean. The other circles aren't being bothered. He grinned. We could get a good price for these rooms. The city is filling up with Bishop Short's shock troops.
Isn't it about time to get the family elsewhere?
Jubal, don't worry. That car never had a chance to report, even by radio. I'm guarding us. It's no trouble now that Jill is over her misconceptions about wrongness in discorporating persons who have wrongness in them. I used to have to use complicated expedients to protect us. But now Jill knows that I do it only as fullness is grokked. The man from Mars grinned boyishly. Last night she helped me with a hatchet job. Nor was it her first time.
What sort of a job?
Oh, just to follow up on the jailbreak. Some few I couldn't release. They were vicious. So I got rid of them before I got rid of bars and doors. But I've been slowly grokking this whole city for months, and quite a few of the worst were not in jail. I have been waiting, making a list, making sure of fullness in each case. So now that we are leaving this city, they don't live here anymore.
They were discorporated and sent back to the foot of the line to try again. Incidentally, that was the grokking that changed Jill's attitude from squeamishness to hearty approval, when she finally grokked in fullness that it is impossible to kill a man, that all we were doing was much like a referee removing a player for unnecessary roughness.
"Aren't you afraid of playing God, lad?"
Mike grinned with unashamed cheerfulness.
"I am God. Thou art God. And any jerk I remove is God, too.
Jubal, it is said that God notes each sparrow that falls, and so he does. But the closest it can be said in English is that God cannot avoid noting the sparrow because the sparrow is God. And when a cat stalks a sparrow, both of them are God, carrying out God's thoughts." Another sky car started to land and vanished. Jubal did not comment.
"How many did you toss out of the game last night?"
"Oh, about 450. I didn't count. This is a largish city, but for a while it is going to be an unusually decent one."
"No cure, of course. There is no cure, short of the discipline."
Mike looked unhappy.
"And that is what I must ask you about, Father.
I'm afraid I have misled our brothers."
"How, Mike?"
"They're too optimistic. They see how well it works for us. They know how happy they are, how strong and healthy and aware, how deeply they love each other. And now they think they grok that it is just a matter of time until the whole human race will reach the same beatitude. Oh, not tomorrow. Some of them grok that 2,000 years is but a moment for such a mission. But eventually." "And I thought so, Jubal, at first. How deeply they love each other. And now they think they grok that it is just a matter of time until the whole human race will reach the same beatitude. Oh, not tomorrow. Some of them grok that 2,000 years is but a moment for such a mission. But eventually." "And I thought so, Jubal, at first. I led them to think so. But, Jubal, I had missed a key point. Humans are not Martians. I made this mistake again and again, corrected myself, and still made it. What works for Martians does not necessarily work for humans. Oh, the conceptual logic, which can be stated only in Martian, does work for both races. The logic is invariant. But the data are different, so the results are different. I couldn't see why, when people were hungry, some of them didn't volunteer to be butchered so that the rest could eat. On Mars, this is obvious, and an honor. I couldn't understand why babies were so prized. On Mars, our two little girls in there would be dumped outdoors to live or die, and 9 out of 10 nymphs die their first season. My logic was right, but I misread the data. Here, babies do not compete, but adults do. On Mars, adults never compete. They've been weeded out as babies, but one way or another, competing and weeding takes place, or a race goes downhill. But whether or not I was wrong in trying to take the competition out at both ends, I have lately begun to grok that the human race won't let me, no matter what." Duke stuck his head into the room.
"Mike, have you been watching outside? There's a crowd gathering around the hotel."
"I know," agreed Mike. "Tell the others that waiting is not filled." He went on to Jubal.
"Thou art God. It's not a message of cheer and hope, Jubal. It's a defiance and an unafraid, unabashed assumption of personal responsibility."
He looked sad.
"But I rarely put it over. A very few, just these few here with us, our brothers, understood me and accepted the bitter along with the sweet, stood up and drank it, grokked it. The others, hundreds and thousands of others, either insisted on treating it as a prize without a contest, a conversion, or ignored it. No matter what I said, they insisted on thinking of God as something outside themselves, something that yearns to take every indolent moron to his breast and comfort him. The notion that the effort has to be their own, and that the trouble they are in is all their own doing, is one that they can't or won't entertain." The man from Mars shook his head. "My failures so greatly outnumber my successes that I wonder if full grokking will show that I'm on the wrong track, that this race must be split up, hating each other, fighting, constantly unhappy, and at war, even with their own individual selves, simply to have that weeding out that every race must have. Tell me, Father. You must tell me."
Mike, what in hell led you to believe that I was infallible?
Perhaps you are not, but every time I've needed to know something, you have always been able to tell me. And fullness always showed that you spoke rightly.
Damn it, I refuse this apotheosis. But I do see one thing, son. You have always urged everyone else never to hurry. Waiting will fill, you say.
That is right.
Now you are violent.